This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson. Later on in the show, I'll talk with the head of Lincoln Center Theater about a major problem, job opportunities for black directors.
We haven't hired many African Americans in a long, long time, and I feel that was a terrible mistake, and I'm changing it.
But first, an even bigger problem, the inevitable energy crisis.
There was a time when energy was a dirty word.
Imagine that it's now the middle of the 21st century, and we've found a new source for powering modern life, the moon. And so we've started mining there.
Today, we deliver enough clean-burning helium-3 to supply the energy needs of nearly 70% of the planet. Who'd have thought? All the energy we ever needed, right above our heads.
This is part of the premise of a new movie called Moon, which opens this weekend. It stars Sam Rockwell as an astronaut industrial supervisor who works on the lunar base, harvesting helium. He's completely alone. His only companion is a friendly, nosy robot. When the movie opens, Sam is just about to finish his 3-year assignment and return home to his family on Earth. That's when it gets complicated. Moon is directed by Duncan Jones, who also happens to be the son of David Bowie. Duncan Jones, welcome to Studio 360.
Thank you very much.
So this man alone in space idea is something that has been explored before in movies, obviously in Stanley Kubrick's 2001. What made you want to revisit this idea?
Both myself and Sam were huge fans of films from that era, particularly films like Outland and Silent Running and Ridley Scott's Alien, which for the first two-thirds of it is not really a horror film until that final act. And really what we wanted to do was go back to those kind of films where you would have sort of a blue-collar character, sort of a proper human being, and try and round them out as a person. And then the science fiction really becomes changing one little thing about their lives or putting them in an alien environment or science fiction environment and seeing how they maintain their humanity or how their humanity is slowly chipped away at because of the setting that they're in.
Given that there are no, space creatures or giant laser battles or anything, was the studio hard to convince?
Well, you know, we did it at a fraction of the budget that studio films are normally made at. In fact, just under $5 million.
Under $5 million?
Yeah. We actually had model miniatures. We built a 40-foot by 30-foot set of lunar exterior, and we had these Tonka truck-style trucks that we were pulling across the landscape with fishing line.
The way it was done 35 and
exactly.
45 years ago.
Absolutely. It was all part of the design. You know, I mean, we literally, the aesthetics of the base, how we designed it and how we made it, were all things that were done to keep the costs down but allow us to tell what we thought was an interesting story.
Well, there's a very witty bit throughout the film. In Moon, the astronaut, Sam Bell, played by Sam Rockwell, has a robot companion named Gertie. And as soon as the computer speaks, you can't help but think of Hal from 2001, A Space Odyssey.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
What's the problem?
I think you know what the problem is just as well as I do.
What are you talking about, Hal?
This mission is too important for me to allow you to jeopardize it.
I don't know what you're talking about, Hal.
And now, let's listen to your Gertie, voiced by Kevin Spacey.
You saw something on TV.
Yeah, I saw something on TV that distracted me. Is there something wrong with that, Gertie?
Sam, you said it was the TV that distracted you, but when I came in, the TV wasn't on. Perhaps you were imagining things.
And Kevin Spacey does that voice in this unnervingly calm, helpful tone, using his name, Sam, like we know from Dave. Was that sort of an explicit homage from the beginning once you decided you were going to have this computer be a key character?
Absolutely, and that's a completely fair comparison. The idea was that, you know, if you're going to have a machine or a robot in a science fiction film and it's going to have a human voice, people are going to immediately make the comparisons with Hal. So I had two ways to play that. I could either pretend that never happened, ignore that fact.
That would be a little coy.
Absolutely. Or we can play with that and play with the idea that the audience are going to bring a certain amount of expectations and assumptions. And then obviously the surprise is that Gertie ends up being a very different personality than Hal was.
Indeed so. You have called yourself a sci-fi geek, and it sounds like from the influences you've talked about, you are. How did you get into science fiction as a kid in, I guess, the late 70s, the 80s?
Well, I was brought up by my father. My parents divorced young, so I was in my father's custody.
Your father being David Bowie.
Yeah, that's correct. And a lot of the things that he was interested in obviously kind of rubbed off on me, or were things that he was showing me. So the films that he loved, I was seeing. The music he was listening to, I was hearing. And the books that he was reading, or the books he thought I should read, he would sort of push my way. And things like George Orwell's 1984, or J.G. Ballard, Philip K. Dick, and William Gibson later on. All of these authors were people that
I started
reading.
So this incredibly ambitious sort of philosophical science fiction.
Yeah, I think so. And generally science fiction, which was about people. I've always found that the most fascinating, how changes in the world affect people.
Well, and your father essentially had a science fiction narrative about a character, Ziggy Stardust.
Absolutely.
Were you aware of that as a kid?
I was aware of it, and I guess it must have affected me in some way, but it was certainly never anything I am sort of intentionally was trying to mimic. It was just part of my background. But my whole career up to this point has been trying to sort of take the time to define myself on my own terms and build up a career in my own right.
Your university thesis was about artificial intelligence and robotics.
It was.
And then you went on to study philosophy. So you've been thinking about the sort of intellectual DNA, if you will, of this film for a while.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been fascinated in the idea of sentience and what it is, what consciousness is. What is in philosophy is called the mind-body problem of whether there is a soul or not. And I think that was always something which I found fascinating and wanted to investigate and see whether you could actually imbue something which is not human with sentience.
Before we talk some more about Moon, I want to give listeners a serious spoiler alert. We find out a ways into the movie that the hero, Sam Bell, is actually a clone when a second Sam Bell shows up. And therefore, the movie winds up being this kind of intense study of personhood.
Yeah, the idea is if you were actually face-to-face with yourself as a person, would you like yourself, or what would you see in yourself? Would you only see the faults, or would you see the things that which actually other people appreciate and like about you? And I think that's a question that's worth asking.
I was also reminded of Ridley Scott's Blade Runner, and when the replicants have similarly existential crises about, am I human or what am I? Was that a reference point as well?
Absolutely. I mean, like I said, there is a series of films which I really treasure in science fiction, and we try to sort of draw the things that meant most to us from those films, but then wrap them into an original story. So I think how we approach it.
And I want to make clear, it does not come across in any way as a pastiche. It's a haunting thing in its own right that I kept thinking about for days after having seen it. Sam Rockwell plays these two versions of himself for the last half of the movie with one another, with himself. How did that work as a technical matter, as an acting matter?
I think it was a huge challenge for Sam up front, and it was certainly one of the reasons why he really took his time deciding whether to be involved and do the film. Technically, it's something which goes absolutely against all of his training as an actor. He's trained in the Meisner technique, which is very much a reactionary form of acting, where you use the other actor who you're working with, you use what they throw at you to sort of spur on your improvisation.
So it is that green screen thing that actors in special effects movie have to deal with all the time these days, but it changes it in an interesting way when it is yourself. Did you tape Sam 1 and have Sam 2 react to himself in that way?
In a way, what we would do is I had the opportunity to speak to Spike Jonze before we did this film, who'd done adaptation with Nicolas Cage, where they had a similar scenario. Spike Jonze had some great advice, saying that when you break down the scenes, look at which of the characters is actually driving the scene and film them first, because everything else can be done based on reactions.
Just put that anywhere. Now, that's a good idea. That's where I keep my leprechauns.
Get out of the way.
So what we did is we would shoot Sam as the Sam that was driving any given scene. That take would go onto an iPod, but basically he would take up into the makeup room and would rehearse to while he was having his makeup done to change into the other Sam.
Why don't you take a pill, bake a cake, go read the encyclopedia?
You're a tough guy now.
What, are you gonna stab me? No, I'm a peaceful warrior. I'm a lover, I'm not a fighter.
And then when he came back downstairs, we would give him an eye line for where he should be looking, and he would perform the other side.
Take it easy, because I go with a knife. Don't ever tell me what to do.
And with something called an earwig in his ear, he was actually able to hear the audio of the playback of the original Sam. So he was able to get those timings right.
Huh. Now, I've also heard you're developing a movie about set in World War II, about men trapped in a submarine.
Absolutely. This is actually based on an amazing true story about the USS Tang, which was an American submarine in the Pacific War that had a torpedo malfunction, and the torpedo actually did a huge loop and sunk itself. It sunk its own submarine. And it's this amazingly dramatic story of how the submariners basically managed to escape from the submarine deep underneath the ocean.
So military guys trapped in difficult mechanical places in unearthly predicaments, yeah. There's a theme working here.
I guess there must be. I might have to do a 3 or 4 films before we know exactly what's going on in my head.
Exactly. Duncan Jones, I want to thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Duncan Jones' new film, Moon, opens in New York and Los Angeles this weekend and in other cities around the country later this month. You can see a trailer for the film at studio360.org. Ziggy played guitar. Coming up.
So look at this one here, and you can see this is based on the skyline of the city of Rochester, but in a kind of recurring geometric pattern. This one's kind of like a psychedelic eyeball. It's art.
Your tax dollars at work. That's ahead in a minute in Studio 360 from PRI and WNYC. Stay with us.